Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry, and with me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. Yesterday, we began looking at an article that was published on September 5th, 2019 in the Salt Lake Tribune. It was titled, Writer Excommunicated During, quote, September 6th Purge, end quote, loses her bid to rejoin the LDS Church. The article deals with a woman by the name of Levina Fielding Anderson, who was one of six excommunicated back in 1993 because they had published things that the leadership of the church were not very happy with, let's say. There were a number of these intellectuals that were involved in this, what they call a purge. Now, the church leadership didn't look at it that way. That's how it was touted by others. But as I mentioned yesterday, Eric, the church back then was a lot less open to criticism, as I would say they are now. It's not that the church will allow any member to say anything they want about the leadership and think that they'll get away without any type of discipline. But back then, you just didn't do that. You did not go public with your criticisms of the LDS church. And so Levina Fielding Anderson was one among this group who was excommunicated. Well, now, after all these years, it's been over a quarter of a century, she now wants to come back into the church because all this time, at least the way she argues, she's a faithful believer in Mormonism. She's never denied her faith in the Book of Mormon. She's never denied her faith in Joseph Smith or the church at large. But now that she wants to rejoin the fold, the leadership has told her flatly, no, you cannot come in. And the point we're trying to make yesterday, and I think we need to continue today, is it shows that in Mormonism, a group of individual men have the say whether you spend eternity as an exalted member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, or you lose all those perks, never hoping to have them again, and you are doomed to spend eternity in some lower level of Mormon heaven, either the terrestrial or telestial kingdom. Now, yesterday we read from this article that this all came about as a result of her husband, Paul, dying. And at his funeral, a statement was read that her husband had put together affirming his testimony in the LDS church. And it was exactly what Levina Fielding Anderson also believes. It says here, I'll read it again, while preparing for the retired Brigham Young University Artists Memorial Service, Bishop Mahanri Madrigal, Mahanri, that's definitely a Mormon name there, read Paul's written testimony or statements of faith that the ward had compiled in the year 2000. Right next to Paul's was Levina's description of her beliefs in Jesus Christ, Mormon founder Joseph Smith, the scriptural text he produced, the Book of Mormon, and the role of prophets. Her testimony was, quote unquote, that of a believer, Madrigal later told her. Quote, he wept as he read it aloud to others. So in other words, in her heart, she believes basically what all Mormons are supposed to believe, and if they do believe, are eligible for all the benefits or perks that Mormonism has for its faithful members. But because she was excommunicated, she doesn't benefit from any of that. The only way she will benefit is if she rejoins the church, which she wants to do, but the church leadership is denying her entry back into the fold where she could participate in the same benefits as every other believing Mormon, which would include, when she dies, being sealed to her husband Paul for eternity. You see, Paul when he was sealed to his wife Levina, fully expected in the next life to be married to her for eternity. But that's not going to happen, especially if she's not going to be allowed back into the church. So you can see again how complicated this church gets with all its rules and regulations and things that I would argue are not even a part of the New Testament and were never a part of the early Christian church.
As you're talking, Bill, the words that come to my mind are salvation that is in hostage. Because what she wants to do, what the church leaders will allow her to do, are opposite. And so she doesn't have much time left, maybe. Maybe she has 5 years, 10 years, probably max, because she's older. If the church doesn't allow her in now, when will they ever decide to allow her back in?
Well, this article goes on to say that a year after Levina's husband Paul died, a stake president by the name of David J. McLean got involved, and it says that they reconvened a high council, a body that had excommunicated her 25 years and 6 months earlier for apostasy. Anderson wrote in a summary of her experience for a forthcoming volume of her essays, Mercy Without End, Toward a More Inclusive Church.
McLean invited her, she said, to describe her faith in a letter, which includes her conviction that God cherishes everyone. In many respects, Anderson's affirmations mirror those of other members. She did, however, tell her leaders her concerns about church exclusion policies, such as barring worthy LGBTQ couples who are legally married from full participation, blocking worthy and righteous women from the male-only priesthood, and keeping Mother in Heaven from her place in our understanding.
Now, this is the hint that we get as to why she was probably denied. Now, there's no doubt that Anderson, back in the 1990s, because I remember this, I remember when all this happened, she was very outspoken. It could be that they knew something about her, that if she was allowed back into the church, that she was probably going to continue to be the rabble-rouser that she was back in the 1990s, and maybe they just didn't want to put up with this. Maybe they know something about her personality that's not coming out in this article and realize that maybe, in their opinion, she wasn't quite as repentant as she's letting on. We don't know. We're just going by what we're reading here. But she definitely holds to some unorthodox positions. But Eric, there are a lot of Mormons that hold to those same positions. The difference, of course, is they don't have a history of being real vocal about it. They may talk about it on a more local level, and that's about it. They're not going public with a lot of these positions, and they're not causing embarrassment to the church with these beliefs that they may even share with Ms. Anderson. But certainly the positions that she describes in this paragraph would be positions that the church does not hold to today. The church can, in my opinion, do whatever it wants. It's an entity unto itself. That's the way the church is. If you don't agree with the church, then maybe go start another one somewhere. But that's the way the church is set up. You're probably not going to change it, or maybe you think you probably could change it. And as we've seen in recent months and years, there has been some turning around of some issues that I think public opinion tended to push in that way.
Bill, I want to go down in the article, and I want to read from LDS scholar Matthew Bowman, who heads the Mormon Studies program at Claremont Graduate University in Southern California. This is what he said regarding the denial of Anderson's appeal to rejoin the church. He gives two reasons, two possible answers, history and dissent. He said, I could imagine that the First Presidency thinking that this is not an episode worth revisiting. The institutional church's position toward its intellectual community has shifted slowly and subtly, but in real ways in the past 30 years. It is possible that there is a worry that allowing for her rebaptism would unearth battles the present First Presidency would like to let lie buried and spur a public relitigation of the issue. But Bill, I'm going to ask you this question. Can you imagine in John chapter 7, verses 53-8:11, Jesus and the adulterous woman? The woman comes up and is very sorrowful for her sins, and Jesus receives her. He doesn't ask her a lot of questions. Are you going to continue on with your ways? He does tell her to go and sin no more, obviously. That is an important thing. But at the same time, he received her without having to go through this whole litigation. And so that, to me, is pretty powerful, as we talked about earlier, that the church leaders have the ability to judge your intent. And what might you do that could possibly further embarrass us down the road. They don't want anything to do with that. So she's collateral damage, I guess you could say, because for them not allowing her to come in, that affects her eternal salvation. But at least the church is protected. She's no longer going to be able to make any kind of a statement that would be critical toward the church as a member of the church. She'll have to continue to make those statements if she wants to, based on not being a member.
Well, the way you just described it, Eric, it makes it sound as if perhaps this decision was more political. It could very well be. There were some political ramifications involved in this. And as you said, they didn't want to find themselves in that difficult situation of dealing with another member who has a history of bringing up these controversial issues, having the platform as a member to bring up controversial issues.
I think you're bringing out a great point, Bill, and that's what Bowman points out in this article. He says there was a fear that allowing for her rebaptism would send a signal on those issues that the First Presidency did not wish to send. So they have to deal with all kinds of different issues, but the big issues are this homosexual issue. That certainly has been a major player in the last few years, and the females being able to get priesthood rights to having that kind of authority, that's a big issue. Why would we let her back in? I can see the church authorities talking together and saying she's going to cause too many problems, and so it'd be easier just to leave her outside the church.
And as we mentioned before, in doing so, they have jeopardized not only Ms. Anderson's future, they have jeopardized her husband's future, who, as we mentioned, died as a very faithful member. And he will, for all intents and purposes, although I don't think any Mormon really qualifies for celestial exaltation based on the rules set forth by the church, but let's just say hypothetically, he qualifies for celestial exaltation. He will not be with his wife throughout eternity.
Let's read the rest of the article, the last paragraph. It says, for her part, Anderson always has felt a, quote, great sense of peace that I made a moral decision, an ethical decision, a decision of integrity and conscience. I did the very best I knew how to do, the thing that I felt was the right thing to do, end quote. And then the story ends, and she'll be in the pews again Sunday.
Wouldn't you agree, though, Eric, that that statement alone is trying to imply that though she made a moral decision and an ethical decision, that perhaps the leadership is not making a moral and ethical decision? That alone might be one of the reasons why the church decided not to allow her back in.
I find it interesting that she says she's going to be back next Sunday, going to a church that offers her absolutely no hope at all.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Did you know that this year marks the 40th anniversary of Mormonism Research Ministry? All of us at MRM want to thank those of you who have faithfully supported our efforts to educate the body of Christ about the differences between Mormonism and Christianity, as well as sharing God's grace with the Mormon people. If you would like to give a special anniversary gift to further our efforts here at MRM, simply click the donate button on our homepage at mrm.org. Your support, as always, is greatly appreciated.